All six Baltimore police officers involved in the April 12th arrest of Freddie Gray are facing criminal charges, including second-degree murder, assault, manslaughter, and misconduct. I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. At a press conference within the last hour and a half, the Baltimore State's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, said Freddie Gray's death was ruled a homicide after an autopsy that had been expedited by the state's medical examiner. Gray died April 19th from spinal cord injuries sustained while in police custody. Arrest warrants have been issued for the officers. We'll have details on the charges and get reaction to them on Midday after the news. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. The news, the six Baltimore police officers involved in the arrest of Freddie Gray back on April 12th, Freddie Gray, who died after being injured in police custody. Those officers have been charged criminally. This was announced within the last hour and a half by State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby in downtown Baltimore. Let's listen to what Ms. Mosby had to say at her announcement.
Well, each of these officers are presumed innocent until proven guilty. We have brought the following charges. Officer Caesar Goodson is being charged with second-degree depraved heart murder, involuntary manslaughter, second-degree negligent assault, manslaughter by vehicle by means of gross negligence, manslaughter by vehicle by means of criminal negligence, misconduct in office for failure to secure a prisoner, failure to render aid. Officer William Porter is being charged with involuntary manslaughter, assault in the second degree, misconduct in office. Lieutenant Brian Rice is being charged with involuntary manslaughter, assault in the second degree, misconduct in office, false imprisonment. Officer Edward Nero is being charged with assault in the second degree, intentional. Assault in the second degree, negligent. Misconduct in office, false imprisonment. Officer Garrett Miller is being charged with intentional assault in the second degree. Assault in the second degree, negligent. Misconduct in office and false imprisonment. Sergeant Alicia White is being charged with manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter, second degree assault, misconduct in office. The findings of our comprehensive, thorough, and independent investigation, coupled with the medical examiner's determination that Mr. Gray's death was a homicide, which we received today, has led us to believe that we have probable cause to file criminal charges. Yes!
Yes! There it is at the announcement desk about an hour and a half ago, State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby announcing charges against the six officers. Joel McCord, news director here at WYPR, is with me in the studio. Joel, we had yesterday an announcement from the police department that they had finished their investigation, and I think a lot of people expected maybe that some time would go by before the state's attorney announced any charges.
That's what we were sitting around thinking about, that, okay, when is she going to file these, is she going to file charges, A, and how long is it going to take? And it was pretty stunning to us that she turned around this quickly and filed them.
Also, because of the autopsy or the medical examiner's report, we didn't know when that was going to be finished.
Right.
I'm not sure. I think yesterday there was a suggestion that it wasn't finished, that it would soon be finished, but I guess it was finished sometime in the last, maybe in the last 24 hours or maybe longer than that. But who knows?
We have been hearing, you know, 30 to 60 days, tox screens, all that sort of thing. But it showed up either last night or early this morning.
The officer, Caesar Goodson, 45 years old, who was the driver of the police van that carried Freddie Gray through the streets of West Baltimore, he is also charged, according to this, with second-degree depraved heart murder, which carries a 30-year penalty. And having never heard that expression before, I had to go look it up quickly. Depraved heart murder, also known as depraved indifference murder, is an action that demonstrates, quote, a callous disregard for human life and results in death. In most states, depraved heart killings constitute a second-degree murder. I just had never heard of that one before.
I had heard the term. I had no idea what it meant until you were kind enough to look it up for us.
Joel McCord from the WYPR News Department. We have some reporters out on this story. We hope to hear from them in the coming hour. Who's out there for us, Joel?
Kenny Burns is. He was at the Marilyn Mosby press conference. He's on his way back now. Chris Connolly has just headed down to City Hall. Congressman Elijah Cummings is expected to be making a statement. And also the mayor at 1 o'clock.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll keep you up to date here. Thanks very much, Joel McCord.
You're welcome.
Our phone number here is 410-662-8780. This is phone number for Midday. We welcome your reaction to these charges today. So please give us a ring here on Midday. Joining me in the studio is Dee Watkins. Again, Dee Watkins now writing a column for the City Paper, author and writer, had a very interesting and provocative essay about this whole thing this week in the New York Times. It's nice to get you back in the studio, Dee.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What's your reaction? You're a little surprised that it came so quickly?
Yeah, I'm surprised, but I'm like, I'm overwhelmed with joy. I feel like the people spoke and our elected officials stepped up and listened to us. And, I'm happy right now.
also with us in the studio is DeRay McKesson, who's been an organizer of the protests, deeply involved in the marches in Baltimore City over the death of Freddie Gray. DeRay, nice to have you join us on the show today.
It's good to be here.
And you were actually downtown when Ms. Mosby made this announcement. You managed to get down to the War Memorial Plaza.
Yeah, I was there.
Can you tell us about it a little bit?
Yeah, this is an important step. This is not yet justice. This is the beginning of accountability. So I'm looking forward to see this all the way through. I will say it was emotional to hear her say that she heard the cries of the protesters say no justice, no peace, because we've been out in the streets for a long time. And today's a 265th day of protest across the country. And, if it were not for people in the streets, those six officers would still be on the streets.
Arrest warrants are issued for the police officers today. A lot of pressure on a prosecutor who's in her first term in office, only elected last November.
She's like the only person right now speaking truth to power. I look forward to see it happen. I don't want those officers to be able to surrender. I want them to be arrested like they arrest everybody else. I want to see the pictures of them in handcuffs so they can like see what accountability feels like and looks like here in America.
410-662-8780 is our phone number if you'd like to join us. Back to Dee Watkins.
To add on to what DeRay said, I want to see the Baltimore City Police Department tweet their photos. Like when they tweet criminals and say it's safe for Baltimore, right. I want to see them tweet their photos out and say, Officer Caesar, whoever, is in custody in charge with second-degree murder, a safer Baltimore.
Well, we'll see if that happens today. Kenny Burns, P. Kenneth Burns of the WYPR news staff, joining us now from City Hall, who was at the announcement made by Marilyn Mosby. Kenny, thanks for joining us.
No problem, Dan. Thank you for having me.
All right. So are you getting some reaction to this announcement today? Do you have any so far?
Well, I spoke with Councilwoman Helga Holton. She's elated. She's happy that we're moving forward in justice in the case of Freddie Gray. She says that it's a small step, but it's a significant step in this process. I spoke with Senate Majority Leader Catherine Pugh, the State Senate Majority Leader Catherine Pugh, who actually says she brought some of her chambermates from the Eastern Shore, walking them around Baltimore to show them the problems that they have to put up with, not just in Baltimore, but from other places in general. As many of the people listening know, and as well as Dan, you and your guests know, there were several bills in the General Assembly session that ended last month now that tried to do some form of reform for the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, address police cameras, and all of them failed at the end of session. So she's hoping that some of the senators that viewed this as a Baltimore-only problem will understand that it's not really a Baltimore-only problem.
At the outset of the announcement by Marilyn Mosby, she started off by saying pretty much at the beginning that Freddie Gray's death had been ruled a homicide after an autopsy that had been expedited by the state's medical examiner. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so she felt she could go forward and had probable cause for second-degree murder, manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter. Those are some of the charges against these officers.
That's correct, Dan. And with that, that shows that, and I'm thinking back to the Tamron West case for those who are not familiar, Tamra West died in police custody in 2013. There were some issues in trying to get the investigation completed right away. The forensic investigation from the chief medical examiners, from my understanding, had a hard time trying to get witness statements, as well as the police investigation. And keep in mind, the state's attorney, they have investigators, and Marilyn Mosby said that they had their own investigators, as well as leveraging the what she could do with the police department, as well as the Baltimore City Sheriff's Department, to kind of move things along and get the investigation done quickly and correct. Well, first of all, getting it done right, but at the same time, also getting it done as quick as possible without jumping the gun.
Let's talk about, for a minute here, about some other things Ms. Mosby had to say, describing how Freddie Gray was treated by the police officers, specifically when it came to getting medical help. Could you talk about that?
Dan, you brought up, that's a good question to brought up. You brought up, because that was the theme that I was getting from Ms. Mosby as she was reading the probable cause statement, that each time that Freddie Gray had asked for help, he, according to the probable cause statement, the officers did not really tend to Freddie Gray. They even when Freddie Gray was unresponsive, when one officer checked on him, they did not seek or ask for medical help.
As she said, he suffered a severe and critical neck injury as a result of being handcuffed, shackled, and being unrestrained in the police van. Is that right?
That's correct.
Kenny Burns at City Hall, thank you very much for filling us in a little bit here. And if you get back to the studio before we're off the air at 2, please join us again.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. P. Kenneth Burns at City Hall. Sheila Cass, host of the Maryland Morning Show, has been out with Matt Purdy, producer of Maryland Morning, visiting Gilmore Homes in the Sandtown Winchester neighborhood. That's where Freddie Gray grew up. That's where he was arrested on April 12th. Sheila, thanks for joining us.
Sure, Dan. Happy to.
Go right ahead.
We came to Gilmore Homes. There's not a big crowd here. We did go through a lot of traffic on North Avenue. We passed a phalanx of police in gray uniforms with shields and helmets, and other officers coming along Pennsylvania Avenue were getting ready to go someplace. So I think there are some crowds. What we found, though, from just individual residents of Sandtown and the Gilmore Homes area, was universal happiness about the charges a certain wariness about what happens if the charges don't lead to convictions. But it's not like there's an eruption of a festival here, but they just got a really good reaction. One resident told us about Marilyn Mosby. She did her job.
You had a chance to speak with a couple of people out there, Juan at Gilmore Homes and then Furious Styles. Can we listen in on that? Do we have that ready?
Well, Furious Styles, an interesting guy. His first point to us is, he said, there's going to be a big push. As he said, don't shuck and jive jury duty. A lot of people don't think there's justice, and they don't take part in juries, he said. And he thinks there's going to be demonstrations and a community push to make sure that people in his community actually stand up and make themselves available for jury duty. I don't know enough about the jury system to know how quickly people who get called to jury duty actually end up serving on jury, so I don't know whether it's realistic that people who heard the news today might actually end up being called for jury duty, but he definitely sees a connection between the community's willingness to involve themselves in the criminal justice system and getting justice for Freddie Gray. And so that was Furious
That's a
style.
Very interesting comment. Here's some more from Furious Styles. Sheila?
Almost everybody we talked to wanted to make sure we understood that they see the tense relations with police as something that goes back for decades and decades.
Mm-hmm.
When I asked, for example, whether these charges would already trigger changes in how police operate, Furious Style said, now it's going to take a lot more than this. So, and we heard that same kind of attitude from several of other residents. We talked to a resident named Trevor Smith, who said it's quite sure that it's because of the riots, and the resident used the word riots, that I believe there were charges. If they had not acted in an extreme way, Trevor said, I believe this would have been swept under the rug. I don't know if that's a widespread opinion, but we did hear that from him.
Sheila, thank you very much for this report. And if we get those sound bites from Furious Styles and Juan, we'll air them another time during this while we're on the air here. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Sheila Cast of Maryland Morning reporting in from Gilmore Hones in Sandtown, Winchester. Dee Watkins, what did you think of that comment about jury duty? You know, a lot of people don't like jury duty, try to get out of it. And this fellow, Furious Styles, is saying, make sure some of us get on the jury. That isn't actually how it works. But maybe he was just trying to encourage people that if you get called, go.
Yeah, I was, I've talked to young people all the time about this. You know, a lot of us don't have a lot of faith in the legal system. And I was telling them, I was saying, listen, you know, let's just say these cops do get charged, right? If they go to court and they get a trial by jury, what's going to happen if no one's on a jury but their family and friends? You know, you guys got to register to vote, because in the state of Maryland, you can't serve on a jury if you're not registered to vote. So, you know, that's, you know, a different way of looking at it. So many people are just turned off and, you know, like against a lot of politicians that we have. And they feel like they have no weight in selecting some of the people who run. But, you know, for the worst, you know, the bad basic, you know, fundamentals of democracy, you got to be able to sit on that jury so you can put people like these criminals who killed Freddie Gray in jail where they belong.
You know, I'm not sure people can fully appreciate what's happened here. Six police officers charged at one time in the death of a person who was in their custody.
Almost never happens.
almost never happens anywhere in the country. And much less in Baltimore City. So, I mean, this is Joel McCord is still with us from the news department.
I'm told this is the first time that a police officer has been charged with second-degree murder ever.
We had an officer, a case that I wrote about from a few years ago, was charged with manslaughter, I believe. He shot an unarmed man in a shopping center over in Hamilton, in northeast Baltimore several years ago. But I don't think it was second-degree murder. I believe it was manslaughter in that case. Thank you very much, Joel. DeRay McKesson, you know, what will this do to, will this diffuse some of the demonstrations this weekend? What do you think will happen going forward here, say, into Saturday? Because we were expecting a large rally. Maybe it will still continue.
I think the protests will continue. We know that any victories without continual pressure will lead to scale backs, right? So the protests will continue. This is not systemic change. This is not institutional or structural change. This is one case that is an important case that could be a model for prosecutors across the country. It could show that there are people in government willing and able to stand up. You know, people don't go to jury duty and people don't believe because they have reason not to believe.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break here. We'll come back and get some more comment. DeRay McKesson joining us here, an organizer of the protests in Baltimore, an author and writer and columnist, Dee Watkins. And you can join us, too, 410-662-8780. That's what we're here for, open phone lines for your reaction to this news. Six Baltimore police officers involved in the arrest of Freddie Gray have been charged criminally by the state's attorney in Baltimore City. A short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Roderick's here. We'll go to our phone lines to get some comments, some reaction from our listeners. 410-662-8780. The Fraternal Order of Police asked Marilyn Mosby, the state's attorney of Baltimore, to appoint an independent prosecutor in this case, citing her ties to the Gray family attorney, Billy Murphy, as well as her lead prosecutor's connections to members of the local media. I'll read Gene Ryan's some of Gene Ryan's letter. Maybe I'll read the whole thing. It's not that long. He is president of the Fraternal Order of Police. I'll read that in a few minutes. Before we go back to DeRay McKesson and Dee Watkins, who are in the studio with us, for more comment from them, we'd like to hear from J. Amy Dillard. She's a law professor at the University of Baltimore. law school, has been on our show a few times now talking about this. She served on the independent panel that looked into the police handling of the arrest of Tyrone West in 2013. Amy Dillard, thanks for joining us again.
Happy to be here, Dan.
Are you a little surprised that this came so quickly after the police report was completed?
Well, I am, because I thought there would be some lag time, but it looks like the prosecutor was probably advised of what was happening during the course of the police investigation so that she was able to begin to think about charges that could be brought. And, I mean, you know, Commissioner Batts also turned it over a day earlier than he had promised.
Right.
So she had all last night to look at it and decide what she thought she could prove, prosecute successfully.
I thought the holdup might be in the autopsy, but evidently she had that. She thanked Governor Hogan for being involved in getting that expedited by the state's medical examiner.
Yeah, I think that was very helpful.
Had you ever heard of the charge, depraved heart murder, Amy Dillard?
I have. I teach it in criminal law.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so there are four ways to prove the classic malice element of any murder charge, and one of them is through a depraved heart theory. It is the grossest form of negligent conduct that you can imagine. I usually give the example of someone who's, you know, drunk and driving 100 miles an hour through a school zone at 8 o'clock in the morning, who runs over a child. So it's not an intentional killing. It is accidental, but it's accidental under conditions of such gross negligence that it receives the same level of punishment as other forms or other theories to prove second-degree murder.
That is one of the charges against the driver of the police van, in this case, Officer Cesar Goodson, who is 45 mm-hmm. years old. Thank you, Amy. So what happens next? They get the arrest of the officers. They get a bail appearance, an initial hearing,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, it looks like, you know, they'll be treated the same way that other citizens are who are charged with crime. That makes this pretty unusual that they're just getting, you know, charged on warrants. They will appear in court. They'll note counsel. They'll then be entitled to a preliminary hearing. And after that, the grand jury will meet and decide whether to indict them or not. But she's taking these cases up the way that they'd be taken up most of the time against most citizens who are charged with a crime.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Amy.
Happy to be here.
J. Amy Dillard, law professor at the University of Baltimore Law School. In the studio with me, Dee Watkins and DeRay McKesson. Did you want to say something before we go back to the phone lines? I want to take some calls from listeners, but Dee?
Yeah, I think this is something that we need to see more. We need to see some of these officers treated like everyday criminals because they never, ever, ever had a reason for stopping him. So why would they get any special privilege? And I feel like we all know that force is an extension, you know, a luxury of their job. But, you know, so many cops abuse it every day. It's like almost, it's like they have no integrity. So, yeah, treat them like criminals. Go through the whole process and, you know, lock them up and, you know, do exactly what they would do if it was me who committed that crime.
You had a very powerful essay in the New York Times this week. We are all Freddie Gray. And you described some of your own experiences as a young man in Baltimore City. Would you mind, for those who hadn't had a chance to read that, a couple of those experiences you had as a young man?
Yeah, so, you know, police brutality is not a new thing to the average citizen of Baltimore City, the average black male, or, you know, anybody who's growing up in a neighborhood that suffers from the disparities that, you know, a lot of other neighborhoods don't have. And I've had plenty of run-ins with the law before I ever broke a law in my life. It's very easy to be a victim.
One took place on a basketball court. Do you mind just recounting that one?
Yeah, and that was just, that was just one of many. But if the police officers in your neighborhood are looking for someone, they're known for coming on basketball courts in the summertime and making everyone lay on the ground face first, and they'll leave us there as long as they want to. Now, you know, given some guys might, you know, be dirty or something like that, but there's also a lot of kids who never did anything wrong, and they're just out there laying on the ground, and they don't care if you, you know, they don't care. They just, they come from a tradition that gives them the right to feel like they can treat young black men like animals. And, you know, we need to kill that mentality. There's like, you know, I agree with DeRay said as far as like this is like a beginning step. But there's so much work that needs to be done, because even still, if these guys go to jail and get life, that's not going to instantly make us trust the police department. They need to do more. And we need to I can't even say mend the relationship because it was never there, but we need to build some type of relationship where they're giving us the same type of service that they give to more affluent neighborhoods and places.
How old were you when that first happened? When you first had an experience on a basketball court? Were you like 12 or 13?
Yeah,
a little older?
12.
12 or 13. 410-662-8780 is our number. Let's go to the phone lines to take some comments, and we'll welcome more comments from DeRay and D. Watkins. Chris in Hanover, south of Baltimore, or Hanover, Pennsylvania, or Hanover, Maryland, Chris?
Hanover, Maryland.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Dan. Big fan of your show. Hello to your guest. Quick comment. I was very happy because I received a bunch of texts about the verdict while I was at work, and was surprised because it went back to focus on the trigger, which was the what seemed to be an unlawful stopping of this young man, and ultimately, it seemed to be a focus in the area about the riding, so I was glad to see that that's where the discussion went back to, really this trigger, which so often is what ends up being neglected in the conversation. And also, I was very happy because I have a cousin who served as one of the attorneys in the Michael Brown case, and it just seemed like although the outcome is a death, the focus again becomes on, you know, someone's history or maybe other incidents that they've had that really are irrelevant. So I commend those that were peacefully protesting and those that really have been dealing with this for so long. And my last comment, and then I'll get off the air here, is that I was fortunate. I had two parents, and I grew up in a relatively affluent area. So although I can relate and empathize, I never had to experience that, and I still had my three run-ins with police just for I felt my color. And at the time, I was too young to probably know what I should have done to follow up and press some sort of charges. But just glad to see this looks like it's a step in the right direction. You guys have a great day.
Chris, thank you very much. Deed, you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, just to echo on that, it's a step in the right direction. But, you know, we have hopefully we can take the energy from this case and use it to fix a whole lot of other issues that plague our communities. Because, like I said, we've been going through this forever.
In the Baltimore Sun's report of this, Marilyn Mosby said an investigation found that the officers bound Freddie Gray's wrists and ankles and left him stomach down on the floor of a police van as they drove around West Baltimore. Despite his repeated requests for medical attention, they did not provide it and continued to drive without securing him in the van. Officers on at least five occasions placed Freddie Gray in the van or checked on him and failed to secure him, she said. By the time they reached the Western District Police Station, he was not breathing and in cardiac arrest. DeRay and Dee, I know you saw these reports. Washington Post had it, and then it was the talk of Talking Heads Television the last couple of days that, you know, Freddie Gray may have, these injuries may have been self-inflicted in the back of the police wagon, and this certainly quashes that whole idea.
Yeah, you know, we believe that the corruption in the police department runs deep, and that they will do anything to wrap this up in a nice little bow. I think that what Maryland did today, what the state's attorney did, is risky. I think she's going to make a lot of enemies in the police department. We're proud of her taking a stand. I think this could be a real model. And the reality is that the police have been violent, that Freddie was alive when he got into the van and he was not alive when he got out. And that's what she reminded us of today, which is fact. And it's interesting that the police are calling for a special prosecutor because they don't want to get charged. I think this could really be an entrance into really uncovering the depth of the corruption of the police here.
Well, let me go back to that letter. I said I would read it from Gene Ryan, the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. Each of the officers involved is sincerely saddened by Mr. Gray's passing. They are all committed police officers who have dedicated their careers to the Baltimore City Police Department, and that has been lost in all of the publicity. All death is tragic, and death associated with interaction with police is both shocking and frightening to the public. Not one of the officers involved in this tragic situation left home in the morning with the anticipation that someone with whom they interacted would not go home that night. As tragic as this situation is, none of the officers involved are responsible for the death of Mr. Gray. To the contrary, at all times, each of the officers diligently balanced their obligations to protect Mr. Gray and discharged their duties to protect the public. Gene Ryan goes on to say, I have full faith in their professional integrity. While I have the utmost respect for you and your office, this is a letter to Marilyn Mosby, I have very deep concerns about the many conflicts of interest presented by your office conducting an investigation in this case. These conflicts include your personal and professional relationship with Gray family attorney William Murphy and the lead prosecutor's connections with members of the local media. Based on several nationally televised interviews, these reporters are likely to be witnesses in any potential litigation regarding this incident. Most importantly, it is clear that your husband's political future, that's a reference to City Councilman Nick Mosby, will be directly impacted, for better or worse, by the outcome of your investigation. In order to avoid any appearance of impropriety or a violation of the professional rules of professional responsibility, I ask that you appoint a special prosecutor to determine whether or not any charges should be filed. One last thing here. We recognize that there are many dimensions to this situation. The public sentiments on all sides, the investigation being conducted by the state's attorney's office, the internal police investigation, and a necessary review of the tools, equipment, and resources afforded to police officers in order to carry out their sworn duty as police officers. That's a letter from Gene Ryan, who is the president of the Fraternal Order of Police. What's your reaction to this idea of an independent prosecutor? You know, I said after the Eric Garner case that I thought that was a good idea. I mm-hmm. wrote a column about it. Other people have suggested it. Get the district attorney, out of this whole mix because they have to work with the police in all these other cases. What about it here? Of course, it didn't happen. We have charges without it. But
is he writing letters when his officers are out? You know, lying and like brutalizing people and breaking the law. Where's the letters for that? When Freddie Gray ran from police and then he got so sad. You know, when he was caught, that he decided to get in the back of a van and break his own neck. Like, when you put out these ridiculous stories, where are you? Why don't you speak out on these issues?
And
right?
that he had a switchblade too. Apparently, that isn't true. The knife that he had on him, it was not illegal to have that knife on him. One of these charges, DeRay McKesson, is false imprisonment.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that's interesting about the special prosecutor is that, you know, many of us in the protest community support that, right, that there should be special prosecutors. It's interesting that the police only released a statement once they knew charges were being filed. They definitely knew the charges were going to be filed by the time this letter came out, and then they're calling for an independent prosecutor, which doesn't, again, show that they actually believe that there should be a just process. They just don't want a process that is negatively impacting them at the moment. And in terms of the switchblade, again, I think this could be a model case for showing the depth of the police corruption. I think that the Walter Scott case in South Carolina was really interesting because it showed on video everything the police said never happened, right? Like, we saw it. It was like the media cover up, the planted evidence, the Shotwell run, all of it we saw. And this is interesting because, again, like, very slowly we see, like, everybody would have ignored it if there was not the video. Then we get this, you know, he tried to commit suicide. Then it was the bolt, and then it was a switchblade. And the police are still riding really hard. And the mayor, I've never been more disappointed in her my entire life. Her inability to talk about this well, her sheer protection of the police, and the ease with which she continues to go about the city as the city is, like, engaged in deep unrest.
What's your criticism of the mayor specifically when it comes to this?
I think her... the way she's talked about the people in pain has been really disappointing, right? So to get on TV and call people thugs, to use that language that is both derogatory and dismissive of people's humanity is a problem. And then the weak apology she offered is also really problematic. It shows that she's, like, not only out of touch with people, but doesn't necessarily understand the gravity of what's happening. Marilyn Mosby, as today I would follow her into the depths of hell. Like, I am
In the mayor's case, I don't know. I was just thinking you have to be careful what you say while something's under investigation. I think, you know, she did express, great deal of concern, say she was disturbed about the death of Freddie Gray. And there was acknowledgement that the police did not follow procedure, did not provide timely medical care. Even,
I think that
even
was
before
the,
we had this.
On the heels of unrest, though. It shouldn't take people coming in. You should get justice whether people are in the street or not, right? Whether the National Guard is mobilized or not, people should experience, white people experience justice, you know, when they are not standing in the street 2,000 deep. And that's what should happen here in this city. And the reality is there is a class of people here in the city, black too, who have watched this fester. I think about my own story. I got pulled over in Roland Park one morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. The officer approached my window with his gun drawn. It's like I have a hoodie on. Like, I'm not doing anything. You pulled me over because I was speeding at 6 o'clock in the morning. So we all have had encounters with the police that have been really unproductive. He drew his gun. He was really amped up. And I'm saying to him, it's okay. Like, that's all I said to him. It's okay. It's okay. And then he put it down.
Were you speeding?
I was.
What was the reason for the stop?
Yeah, I think I was probably going faster than I was right in front of Miss Shirley's.
Did he cite you?
Nope.
Just had a conversation and you left?
I mean, he was really worked up. So, like, after he finished cursing and yelling, and he, like, eventually was like, you know, I'm sorry. And then we, like, drove away. And then he, you know, pulled up to me as we were driving. He was like, oh, I saw your birthday was soon. And it's like, we are not friends. Like, wow. That is crazy.
Let's take another call, and then we'll take a break here and come back and take some more calls. Cheryl in Catonsville, go right ahead. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, good afternoon. I wasn't actually going to comment on the conflict of interest question, but since it was raised by the Fraternal Order of Police, I'd like to say, is there no conflict of interest between the prosecution, police, judges, court-appointed defense attorneys, and informants when it's normal citizens? In those cases, did they request a special prosecutor for those cases? I don't, you know, for the Freddie Grays of the world, I don't think so. So his statement actually offends me in some ways. But that wasn't what I called to say. I could get that off my chest.
Okay, Cheryl.
But in any case, just two things. One, I'm sad, actually, about this situation with the police being indicted. I'm sad that it's taken this long and the death of another young man to bring the police to call for their actions, one. And then two, I think that, I want to see change from protests result in other kinds of changes, and specifically, protests are great, they're fantastic, we need them, but they need to result in structural changes, and that is a very tall order, so I'm going to challenge the protesters to keep the heat on, but to channel it in a way that results in structural change. And then I want to also challenge protesters to have a change of heart. And when I say change of heart, I mean that we have to, in addition to protesting about the police officers and the situation, we need to also, you know, think about the fact that Freddie Gray's family didn't have enough money for the funeral, and that actually a white gentleman stepped up to the table to help pay for the bill. So for all the people protesting, and Freddie Gray is the central issue here, and yes, the police are another issue, but if he is really the victim, then there should be a lot of money pouring in to cover his funeral costs and his family support.
Cheryl, thanks very much. We have to take another break here. We'll come right back and take some more phone calls and hear more from Dee Watkins and DeRay McKesson in Studio A with me here. It's the Midday Show, 410-662-8780. We'll also hear some of the voices of people in Gilmore Homes reacting to this news of the charges against the police officers.
This change right here. This is what we march for. This is what that first day was, to go down there and let them know that Gilmore Homes was behind them since day one. And this show, change. There ain't no officers getting away with this. And this came too big and too far. Towns, states, the world came behind this. They showed that this is going to bring change. And also, we have to work together. Now we have to build our communities up and get these youth something to do. We have to. It shows we have to change both sides. Policy, the people, it's just, so many people are smiling because you can see that they did a thorough investigation. They didn't just give them any charges. They charged them accordingly. And that's the best part of it. You know they did a thorough investigation.
That's person named Juan who spoke to Sheila Cast and Matt Purdy out near in West Baltimore in Sandtown, a person from Gilmore Homes reacting to this news of the charges against six Baltimore police officers who were involved in the arrest of Freddie Gray. These officers are charged with second-degree murder. Some are charged with involuntary manslaughter, second-degree assault, misconduct in office, at least one charged with false imprisonment. and the driver of the police wagon charged with depraved heart murder, which carries a 30-year penalty. Dan Roderick's here on the Midday Show with DeRay McKesson, who's an organizer of some of the protests that have been going on here for the last couple of weeks, and Dee Watkins with us. Also, DeRay, you were down in Ferguson a lot since the death of Michael Brown, took part in demonstrations down there as well. And we see support for what happened here in Baltimore and other cities now, including in Ferguson the other night.
Yeah, you know, today's, like I said, the 266th day of protests, actually. And there's a strong protest community across the country. There are many people that have come to Baltimore to support the protests. I came back home to Baltimore to support the protests. And, you know, justice is two-pronged. It is at once not ever experiencing the trauma, right? That there are, like, things in the structure and system to make you never, that Freddie never would have been killed. And it is also accountability for people who initiate and perpetuate the trauma. And, you know, Black people have never experienced justice full-pronged. Like, even if these officers get convicted and they go to jail, that'll just be half of what the equation of justice is. And there are many people across the country who are awake now and who realize that.
410-662-8780 is our number. D, did you want to say something there?
I agree.
Let's go to the phone lines and get some comments from our listeners here. John and Glen Burnie, go right ahead.
Hi, Dan. This is John. I just want to say I really enjoy your show. I disagree with you a lot, but I think it addresses so many important issues.
Well, thanks for listening.
My comments are kind of straightforward. One, just a quick background. I'm a middle-aged white guy. I grew up poor in a very rough area in New York in the late 60s, early 70s, all, you know, during the race riots and a lot of the other big issues going on at the time. So as I'm listening to all the things going on, the conversation's evolved since I first dialed in. But just the critical issues I'd like to address are these. One, I think one of the discussions that's not being looked at, really, is the element of Black racism that exists in the community, as white racism exists in the white community. I think what we've seen was so many good people coming out, cleaning up and doing so many important things, and the protesters themselves that maintained a level of dignity in their protests, I think is so important. But I think underlying some of the elements, whenever you move into a mob scene or a riotous situation, you're dealing with other agitational elements that I think exponentially evolve in a rapid sense. And then you get emotions and then caught up in the momentum of the crowd. So I think, you know, part of what drives some of that is an element of Black racism. The second thing what I wanted to, getting back to the notion of the community, is...
Can you explain that?
We're all looking at each other. Yeah, what's that last line?
What's the Black racism?
Yeah, what did
you
say?
Define that?
Yeah, John.
What I'm saying with respect to the Black racism is that as white racism exists in the white community, Black racism exists in the Black community. Well, and I think
what is Black racism?
There is a group of individuals, and I've experienced them when I was young, that just don't like people because they're white, the same way some white people don't like people because they're Black.
That's prejudice. That's not racism.
It's not because what it leads to is a set of actions that are perhaps predicated on the prejudice, but they become actual actions that cause problems on both levels. And I'm not trying to get into a Black versus white thing. I'm just saying that it is a motivational factor for some individuals. I'm not saying all individuals. I thought I was kind of clear on that.
Hey, John, I was a little confused on something. You were making the point that you were hoping that the cleanup efforts and this positive momentum would not fall off, and then you threw in Black racism.
That in first, and then I wanted to move to the community involvement thing, because what I saw on TV was a lot of good people coming out. I can recall one woman just coming out with a broom, shaking her head, just cleaning up, because it's already too many nails here.
All right. Thank you very much, John. Let's go to Ben in Baltimore to stay a little bit more on point here regarding the charges against the police officers here today. Go right ahead, Ben.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Sure. I was going to make a comment about my first experience with the police as a non-U.S. citizen when I was 13 years old, but I'm going to forego that comment and ask a more important question to you, Dan, and to your panel. I'm trying to figure out, do you think that there's a lack of compassion from the Baltimore police has anything to do with what happened in the 1950s from the white flight that took place? When people leave the city, they take their belongings, their loved ones, and still hold jobs, as some of the officers
officers do. They live in a county but work in the city, and even the policymakers, that when they come back to care for the city or to do their job, that there's no stake in it for them. They're just here to do a job. And do you feel like there's a connection between that? Because for me personally, I feel that there is a major connection, and that the roots of this problem can be really traced back to a certain time and period.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that certainly is part of the history here in Baltimore. And as it's relevant to today, police officers who don't live in Baltimore City,
90%?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, they have a choice about where they live. Is it 90% or?
It's a super high number.
All right.
Because maybe like 10% don't even live in the state of Maryland.
Yeah, I did hear that too the other day. So, what do you think about that? If you're in that particular type of job, do we think you will be more invested in the job, in how you interact with people, you actually live in the city?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that they don't treat the residents of their communities like they treat the places where they do police work.
But they're not police officers out in the county. Say somebody lives in Harford County, right?
Yeah, but they're still not a sheriff. I feel like there's a certain level of humanity, though. Even if we're not even talking about, so police officers are responsible for communicating, right? When they communicate with us, or when they communicate with black people in the city, you know, it's always like, F you this and do this and F that and F that. And I'm sure they're not really talking to, they don't even have to talk like that. Nobody wants to hear that. They don't have to talk like that. The problem is, you know, and if you think about the Freddie Gray incident, you know, broke this guy's neck and threw him in the back of a van and let him sit there, right? You know, why is it 2015 and we still have to march and fight and protest just to, you know, show our human? You should know that we're fellow human beings.
But what Ben's getting at is, why does it happen to begin with? And does that have something to do with police officers live, this idea that, you know, they have this...
Yeah, police officers... Yeah.
They drive into the city, they get in uniform, they go out and they do their job, then they go home.
Yeah, not living in the city, you know, they don't have any connection with the community. They don't understand the people, they don't understand the culture, and they just don't respect them, and it's obvious in the way they police. So, they should live in
the
city.
What do you think of that, DeRay?
You know, I think there is merit to this idea that police officers should be in the spaces that they police. They should have to live in them, understand the community, frequent them, have a responsibility to those relationships. I think that's real. I also think there's something deeper here about race and how black people, black men specifically in neighborhoods like Gilmer Homes have been dehumanized, and it has been okay for them to be victims of the police in a way that there's never been accountability. I think that what's interesting about this is that we see the state's attorney taking a hard line and risking the relationships with her office in the police department to say, we're going to hold you accountable. And the reality is that there are women here, too, who have been killed by the police here, too, and who get victimized regularly by police officers, and there's been no justice for them. So I think this could actually be like a game changer in the cultural space for how the police act, not necessarily in the structural space yet. I think that'll take more pushing.
Let's take one more call before we close out this hour. Then we'll have another hour of midday on the very same subject after the news. Joseph in Baltimore, go right ahead with your comments, please.
My comments are that the panelists and you have already convicted these officers. They're entitled to
What happened, Joseph? Oh, Joseph hung up. They're entitled to due process. Well, we haven't convicted anybody. All we've done is go over the charges, and I allow my guests to comment on them as they're free to do. As far as I'm concerned, I just relate the charges to you. So I haven't convicted anybody here. R. Douglas writes in to say, innocent until proven guilty is still our way, and even if these men are proven guilty of heinous wrongs, it still strikes me as a moment deserving of deeply somber reflection on the culture that nurtured this wrongness, rather than a celebration of vengeance, justice perhaps, but not vengeance. Our midday email address, midday@wypr.org. If you want to send in more comments by email, I'll read them in the next hour of the show. DeRay McKesson, what do you expect tomorrow? The rally will go on as planned around 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah, the no real details for the rally have been announced yet, but I think that there will be protests. There are three today. And remember that what's important about this is that
today as well?
There are three today at 3 o'clock, three different protests, and people are assembling at Pendant North, is that the police kill Freddie as a condition of their job, which makes this like a different thing. So people will continue to protest for sure.
Thank you very much for being here, DeRay McKesson, one of the organizers of the protests. It was in Ferguson as well as back here in Baltimore. And Dee Watkins, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Nice to have you back on the show. And we'll get some more comments in the second hour of our show today. We'll take a break for lunch and have some pizza from Joe Squared Pizza, located at 133 West North Avenue in the Station North neighborhood at the Inner Harbor at Power Plant Live. And you can find them on the web at joesquared.com.